people, on the program today, this has been a week that has seen almost the entire top political leadership of the Congress under attack from Maoists in Chhattisgarh. Yet, as civil society and politicians debate what should be the anti-Naxal violence strategy, yet again, and this is familiar after every assault by Maoists, there is still no consensus. There continue to be ideological contradictions among politicians, and there continue to be ideological contradictions among civil society. On the program today, we're asking whether the intelligentsia of India is still romancing the Naxals, whether the idea of an ideal revolution is actually impacting and standing in the way of a cogent anti-Naxal policy, and of course, is this just an issue that is now being politicized instead of being addressed? Let me start with you, Ajay Sahani, well-known security analyst and commentator. You have been arguing for a long time that there is no cogent policy, but you've also argued that there has been an underutilization of trained police personnel, trained security personnel, instead much of that responsibility being transferred on disastrous experiments like the Salvajudam. When you look at what's happened in this past week, do you believe that in India there is by and large a consensus on what we should do next, or do the ideological divisions continue to plague our national discourse?
You see, there are not only ideological divisions.
Yes.
The problem is there is no understanding of what the components of a strategy should be.
Yeah.
We've taken emergency responses and turned them into chronic realities of a situation. We deploy forces from outside and we think this is a solution. We fail as a result to build up local capacities for decades at end.
Yeah.
And then the problems persist. Why do the problems persist? Again, because we want results in 3 months and 6 months. So you have a complete ideological and strategic incoherence. You have a situation where everyone is justifying. There is an undercurrent of constant justification.
Does that continue till today?
Absolutely, without any qualification. For a few days after an attack, you will see a crystallization. Mm. And this has been true both of insurgency and of terrorist attacks.
Yes.
Major terrorist attacks, for 1 week we go around screaming, destroy them, send in the army, send in the air force, teach them a lesson. And then it's back to business as usual. I wouldn't have a problem if this was a serious ideological debate or division.
You think it's an artificial one?
But
then there should be a commonsensical consensus, surely, that violence can never be justified,
and at the same time,
nor can human rights violations.
It's got nothing to do with common sense.
Then
it's got nothing to do
what
with
does it have to do
justification.
With?
It's got something to do with the constitution and a law.
Okay.
Every crime under the sun has a sociological and a political and economic consequence.
Yeah.
The December 18th rape did not occur in a sociological
vacuum.
That does not mean that we do not apprehend, prosecute and punish these people.
So what I'm hearing,
the rule of law,
must prevail.
Of law must prevail. It doesn't matter what else, whatever else.
Why do you believe, before I take that to Vikram Srivastava, who's of course been the head of the CRPF formerly, why do you believe there continues to be this undercurrent of rationalization? Because that is where our discourse actually collapses. We do not have a public agreement. Forget the politicians. We don't even have an agreement among civil society members.
Because we do not have a real understanding of the nature of democracy.
Yeah.
We assume democracy means keeping everyone happy, which is really not possible. We assume that democracy means no use of force. Whereas the entire theory of democracy is on the constraint lawful use of force.
Okay.
These are simply things that are not understood by our both by our politicians and by the chattering classes.
Let me take that to you, Vikram Srivastava, if I can. When 76 of your men were actually killed in Dantewada, what Ajay is talking about, a cycle of the same happened. You had shows like this, you had headlines in the news for a week. Tragically, now when people die, you have other stories that actually get more play, even in mainstream media, than this very, very grave issue of Naxalism. As somebody who has been the head of the CRPF, when your men died at that time, many people critiqued the operation. They said it was an operation that went wrong. But what is the single biggest hurdle you face as a security officer in dealing with this? Is it the absence of political consensus, or is it the backlash from public intellectuals?
See, on the ground, the forces which exist, they are in very remote areas.
Yeah.
And they are there to create a sense of security amongst the people so that developmental activities can happen, so that people can get what they should be getting under so many different schemes of the government.
Yeah.
Now, when they are in that area, for whatever reason, good or bad, an encounter ensues. Somebody has to have a loss, the other side or this side. When these encounters happen, it becomes very essential to keep the morale of the men intact.
So let me ask you about that. That's a very important point you've raised. And a number of people are making the argument that this complete ideological ambiguity, the lack of coherence in what the policy should be, and that, by the way, extends particularly to the UPA government that hasn't been, you know, which speaks in multiple terms. One of its ministers will say Maoists are terrorists. Another minister will say, no, they're not. When you talk about the morale of the security forces, what hurts their morale the most? The absence of consensus? The absence of empathy? Which one?
See, they are in very remote areas, and therefore, to keep up their morale, everything needs to be made available to them at the right time, including the most important aspect, and that is intelligence. The operations, I feel, have to be intelligence-based operations.
How much are you hampered by the lack of ideological coherence? Like, do you know when your men are operating what the policy is? Because I haven't understood what the policy is to combat Maoist violence. I do not think that there is one defined policy.
See, as I have understood, the policy is to dominate the area so that the people know that there is a security force and we are free to move around, the developmental activities can happen.
But you know, sir, at this point, you have an election coming up in Chhattisgarh, Professor Hargopal. The Congress has argued, and Rahul Gandhi made a statement saying that this is not an attack on one or the other political party, it's an attack on democracy. Now, one of those killed was, of course, the founder of the Salwa Jutum, which has come in from sharp criticism by no less than the Supreme Court. But when you look at the Congress state president, Nand Kumar Patel, on many issues, he actually took the same position as the Maoist groups. He was against rapid industrializations at the cost of Adivasi rights. He had an economic policy that was closer to the Maoists than to many of his own Congress leaders. Sir, you have been a mediator on more than one occasion, securing the release of two bureaucrats at least who were taken hostage by the Maoists. So you're right in there. You have a channel of communication with them. You're often called a Maoist sympathizer. I'm asking you today, why does this romance around Naxal violence persist? Why do we keep putting an idealized narrative on what is really blood-chilling gore and death?
No, I don't think that perhaps there is a mistaken impression that we idealize, romanticize. That's not true. As one associated with human rights movement, I think a friend was mentioning.
Yes.
About the rule of law, and one has to make a distinction
between
the movement which is struggling and doesn't believe Indian constitution, doesn't believe in the system,
yes,
and challenging the system,
yes,
on one side, and the state on the other side, legally constituted, owes its loyalty to the constitution, the power flows from the constitution.
Yeah.
Now, the values under trial are not their values. Values under trial are values of the state.
So, you're saying you can't hold the Maoist groups up to constitutional standards, but the state must be held to
those
standards.
They have taken a political position.
Yeah.
A legally constituted state, if it abdicates the rule of law and constitutional law, what is the distinction between Maoist and Indian state? And if the Indian state resorts to the same method that the Maoists resort, then why are we supporting Indian state?
Okay, before I take that back to Ajay, I want to ask you something.
Yeah.
When Mahendra Karma gets killed as the founder of the notorious Salwa Jutum, the fact is that there are many, many commentators who, without saying it in so many words, almost say he had it coming. I mean, I have heard people say this to me in the past week. My question is this. As a mediator, you have always argued that violence begets violence. But then when even the founder of the Salwa Jutum gets stabbed, according to reports, 78 times, he gets stabbed. What does it do to your ideological position, sir?
This ideological position is to completely equate the movement in the entire tribal belt, Chhattisgarh, Jharkhand,
yeah,
Central Bihar, Gadchiroli, Orissa, Andhra, West Bengal.
Yes.
Okay. If you completely think that this is the Maoist movement, I think nation is misled. It is a tribal struggle. After all, Chhattisgarh's struggle didn't start with Maoists. You go back to the
does
history.
The tribal struggle
for the last 150
years. Does the tribal struggle include wiping out the political leadership of a party that was doing nothing else in this context except going for a rally, for an election rally? Is that justified, sir?
No, see, what I am saying is that when the tribals are completely uprooted from the life and livelihood and from the resources, and you want to evict them forcefully so that you can mine in those areas, who will accept?
Okay, let me just get Ajay.
They fought with East India Company. They are fighting after the tragedies they have been fighting.
Okay, Ajay, briefly, if you want to come in there, is what you're hearing from Professor Hargopal the undercurrent of justification you were referring to, or do you think he's making a legitimate argument that you can't hold the Indian state to the same standards that you can? One has to act within the ambit of the constitution, the other is extra constitutional by definition.
Absolutely, I would agree with that, but I would also like to suggest that this idea that this is a tribal movement is a completely misleading idea. Across the country, in different parts, the Maoists have harnessed or harvested different grievances depending on whatever is available locally.
Yeah.
There is no commitment to the actual improvement of the welfare of the people there. But whatever is the local problem. In Bihar at one time it was a pure caste war.
Yeah.
But was being called Maoism. Today, because certain grievances have crystallized around certain policies in Chhattisgarh, it is being projected as a tribal movement. At the end of the day, it is an extremely violent ideological movement based on Maoism, which says power flows through the barrel of the gun. That's the beginning and the end of the essence of this
movement. So, Ajoy Bose, as somebody who was once a revolutionary, and you've written about this, you were that quintessential liberal product of St. Stephen's College, and like many of your college mates, and by the way, we're going to talk to Praveen Mahindru, and he's also the same sort
you're
of fabric.
You're just comparing notes.
You're just comparing
in college,
notes.
Yeah.
You were in college together,
yeah,
but yeah. Ideological opposites, I'm going to imagine.
Yeah.
Now, you wrote about this time when you actually had to unsheath your knife and you couldn't do it. You couldn't reconcile your mind's empathy with the cause as you understood it then with the fact that people actually had to be killed. And that was the beginning of your disenchantment.
Yeah, sure. I mean, let's get this a little clear.
Yeah.
You know, we
yes.
Who went from St. Stephen's and of course, like us at that point particularly, there were a lot of people who, you know, young students who went from upper middle class and upper class backgrounds. And we were certainly not a part, really, of the theater we were participating in.
Yeah.
But let me make this very clear, that the violence we are talking about, which Maoists indulge in, is a part of the general violence in the social milieu they are operating in. This is a very violent society. As soon as you step out of these air-conditioned studios, even in Delhi, the slums of Delhi are very violent, and certainly the forests of Chhattisgarh are very violent. Maoists did not introduce violence there. They reveled in that violence. They reveled in that violence.
And then escalated
they took
that
it
violence.
And escalated
and then
it
yeah.
with sophisticated weaponry and everything. But it is a very violent society. And please try and understand, we tend to either romanticize the Maoists or demonize them. They have their own agenda. I totally agree with Ajay Sahni when he says that they are basically against the constitution. They do not accept your constitution.
Mm.
And anybody who believes in the constitution has to fight them. There is no question. It's the duty of the state. But we have to be clear-headed about this fight.
So when you hear Jairam Ramesh saying that these are terrorists,
but I think that you know, calling them by any name doesn't change.
Absolutely. Is the nomenclature irrelevant?
It is completely irrelevant, because I think that listen, if somebody is murdering, somebody is murdering somebody else, that's a crime under the law. It has to be punished. There is no justification for murder. And I mean, very correctly says, every murder you can go back and find some sociological,
reasoning justification, for it. How do you explain the undercurrents of justification that Ajay Sahni is talking about? That there is a kind of ideological rationalization. Let's not call it justification. Let's call it rationalization.
Yeah, no, absolutely. This is a very violent creed. And that is where we need to distinguish. There is a large number of left-wing radicals who actually participate in elections, who are fighting human rights struggles.
Yeah.
They are not picking up the gun at all. And to lump them with people who are murdering other people, that is where the big mistake we make. And in fact, fail to isolate the people who actually are committing a crime against the state.
Praveen Mahindru, would you agree with that? Would you agree with the following assertions that we've made, that the nomenclature irrelevant. It doesn't matter you want to call them somebody who broke the law murderers, you want to call them terrorists, irrelevant. Is it irrelevant for those of you who have to fight on the ground? You have served as a police officer in Chhattisgarh, you've worked on the Maoist issue for 20 years. Is the nomenclature irrelevant? And the reason I ask this is because there's an enormous political ambiguity in actually how to tackle the Naxal violence. You have some ministers saying terrorists, other ministers saying no, they're our own people. Our own people can also be terrorists, some would argue.
Barka, before I answer that, I'd just like to clear up a few myths that surround this entire, shall I say, movement for the time being. Myth number one, which Ajay referred to, that it is essentially a movement which is fighting for the tribals. I beg to disagree entirely. It is not a movement fighting for the tribals.
What are they fighting for?
I'll come to
in
that.
In your opinion.
I'll come to that. If they were fighting for the tribals, I have statistics to prove that about 50% of the civilians that they kill, incidentally, they kill anywhere between 500 to 700 civilians per year. This is the Maoists.
The official figures say that 300 civilians died in 2012 and 114 security forces from the Home Ministry. These are figures from the Home Ministry.
Yeah, that is 2012, but 720 civilians were killed in 2010. Plus 300 and odd.
So you're saying you find it disingenuous when it's described as a movement for the tribals. Is that your argument?
My point is that almost 30 to 35% of their victims, and I mean only killed. I don't mean hurt, injured, or otherwise, are tribals. 30% are police personnel. The remaining 30-odd% is other civilians. Anyway, that is the myth number one, that they are only fighting the cause of the tribals. If they were fighting the cause of the tribals, what are they doing in Bihar, which has only 1% tribal population? If they are fighting the cause of the tribals, what are they doing in Punjab and Haryana? Why are they not there in Dongargarh, for instance, in Rajasthan?
Professor Raghupal, would you like to come in there? Give me a second, Praveen. Would you like to come in there? What you're hearing is the assertion that there is a kind of rationalization of violence when you call this a movement for the Adivasis, for the tribals.
Now, Barka, one question we have to ask is, one, why this movement expanded? Two, how it survived for 40 years? And government of India acquired so many powers under so many laws that yet with all the power that is given to the security forces, you are not able to put down the movement. Why?
We have no intelligence capacities being developed. We have no capacities to fight back. And those capacities have been intentionally ignored or neglected by the political executive in every one of these states.
But is the political executive also influenced by the ideological confusion? You have prominent intellectuals, it's often said, in the National Advisory Council. They have one set of views. You have Chidambaram as Home Minister who had another set of views.
The political leadership is influenced by pure confusion. When the Andhra Maoists were pushed out, they started coming into Chhattisgarh. What does the Chhattisgarh administration say? Oh, this is not our problem. It is an overflow problem or a spillover problem from the neighboring state. So if a thief comes into my house from the other house, it's not my problem, it's his problem.
Professor Raghupal, I want you to specifically answer that. How do you call wiping out a political leadership and act on behalf of the Adivasis? Because these politicians will argue that we were going to strengthen democracy. You say that it has been a failure of the state in these areas, but you have politicians who are going into the heart of the Maoist areas saying we want to conduct an election. Do you accept the argument that these killings were an assault on democracy?
No, but the question is that, see, look at the political parties. In Andhra, when N.T. Ramarao fought the elections, he said they are patriots. Right?
Yes.
2004, when Rajshekhar Reddy fought the election, the entire election in 2004 in Andhra Pradesh, let the house remember, was fought on the Maoist issue. Whether to go for peace talks or not to go for peace talks. Chandrababu Naidu was attacked and Chandrababu Naidu dissolved the assembly prematurely and went to the people and wanted a mandate to put down the movement, and Rajshekhar Reddy said we will go for peace dialogue and people gave the mandate, and when we went to the Maoists to invite them for peace talk, we told them that this is not only mandate to Congress party, this mandate for you. If you say that you are supported by the people, then you have to take people's mandate. And that's how Shankaran, who was a legendary IAS officer of the country, convinced them and they came for peace talks. And let us not forget that
no election
has
ever been fought on the Maoist issue.
No election has ever been fought on the Maoist issue.
No election has been fought on the Maoist issue.
Okay, we're going to go back to that. A very interesting argument.
But Baka, if I may just very quickly come in here.
Yeah.
You was talking about that the Maoist movement exists in many other parts. But let us make no mistake that the Maoist problem today, as we know it, is most acute amongst the Adivasi. Is it not that the main killings are happening where tribals are concentrated?
And why are they killing those tribals?
No. Of course.
Hold on, let me just complete.
All I'm trying to say that if you think that the Maoists had no support at all among local tribals, consider, even as a security man, you know, and I think that a lot of security people do admit that they do have a certain amount of local support. Otherwise, they would not have been able to survive.
Come in there and then Sudeep should be waiting a while.
It is out of fear and nothing else that people are supporting them.
Daud Ibrahim has local support.
Fear also is there. Let us not be myopic.
Okay, Daud Ibrahim has local support. Ajay is kind of making the point that that shouldn't change the essence of the debate. Okay, they have local support, Ajay.
Obviously,
there is an element in all conflict zones. All conflicts. You take the North East, you take Jammu and Kashmir, you take the Maoists. They are able to exist because there is an ideological disconnect between the state and the citizen. Do we not have to accept that to start with? There is an ideological breakdown in that relationship.
That's in fact the basic crux of the problem, because there is a breakdown and there the Maoists are exploiting that breakdown.
But you don't accept that they are primarily a tribal
area? No, certainly not.
We'll revisit that. But Sudhir, I want to come back to this point about the romance of the revolutionary. And I ask you this because you actually made a film, Hazaro Khwahishe, where one of your protagonists was this Delhi University student who dreamt of changing the world, much like Ajoy Bose would have done so as a student himself.
Yeah.
Is this romanticization proving to be lethal? And the reason I'm asking you this is because while there is no contradiction in the... I take Professor Hargopal's fact that there are citizens that feel that they're not empowered. They don't feel themselves to have a voice in the system. But the moment you lay that as an if and but around a murderous assault, it prevents a national consensus.
No, absolutely, but I do understand why there has to be this, if you end with us, you are against us kind of thing. And the problem is that you have to have a security response because, you know, violence cannot be accepted. But the problem is that if you lump everybody, like Ajoy was saying, who are left liberals, who are working, who are perfectly non-violent, who are working democratically, and you turn them into Maoist sympathizers, then you are left with a people and a society where the interface with the people is only the police force. And how can you make it work? Can it work like that? So, I mean, I don't understand why we say that there is an ideological confusion even within a party. There should be.
There has to be
a dual approach.
Let me ask you.
And why is, let's say, Binayak Sen called a Maoist sympathizer? Why is he not called a doctor who's working amongst the people who also
What is Binayak Sen, Praveen Mahindru, for you? Binayak Sen now serves on a panel of the Planning Commission, but Sudhir Mishra was making the point that he is a qualified doctor who works in these areas. The other counter argument may be that this adds to the ideological confusion. What is the message you're sending to security forces? Because this is a man, however unfairly one may think, was called a sympathizer by a court.
Not only called, he's been convicted. The High Court has convicted, the Sessions Court convicted him of under UAP Act for aiding the Maoists.
But is that helping the issue or is it worsening it? I think that's the question.
The point,
if you are going to punish people for their ideology, and that's the point I think Ajoy was making,
Barkha,
that you've got to distinguish between ideological affinity and actual killing. You just escalate the problem.
If you think you can just stop the security forces from having an appropriate response. If Mr. K.P.S. Gill can say that if you cannot patrol 80 kilometers of a road, how is that Binayak Sen's fault?
Ajay, do you want to comment?
Binayak Sen, depending
on your ideological leanings, Binayak Sen will either be described as this doctor who has devoted his life to working among the tribals and the poor, or he will be described as a convicted Maoist. And neither argue as vociferously on both sides.
No, I would like to suggest that he was tried for conspiracy, criminal conspiracy, yes, with the Maoists. And frankly, that case would fall flat on its face. I know senior police officers who were handling that prosecution who said openly, if we were actually to make this decision, we would never have taken him to court. Now, the point is, if he was actually a conspirator,
yeah,
then they should have waited, arrested him after they had got enough evidence to get a convincing conviction. They actually, the case is riddled with infirmities in terms of the quality of evidence. And it is unsurprising that it has been thrown out.
Vikram Srivastava, you want to come in there? Yes. I'll just bring it back to you. Vikram Srivastava.
I'd just like to raise a very basic issue.
Yeah.
And you've said that the tribals, they also support this cause. A very basic point. Why are the TV towers, the mobile towers being blown up? Why are the schools and dispensaries and old police station buildings which have been created since the past 2-3 decades, why are they blowing up? Why are the culverts being broken? Why are the roads are being dug up? Don't they want that the arm of the government should reach the tribals?
Ajay, do you want to come in there?
Yes, I want to come in here.
Yeah.
Of course, the Maoists, the Naxalites have no intention and no will to have development or democratic
then
politics.
Then how do you call it a movement for the Adivasis?
The Maoist agenda is to have as much trouble. In fact, they would love Air Force coming and bombing them,
absolutely,
army going and this thing,
yeah,
because that would increase collateral damage. They would love it. This hardcore group of Maoists. Sorry.
But Ajoy, you haven't explained one thing.
A larger human rights group to work, they will definitely...
Ajoy, one question before I get Samir Singh in. My question is this. His point, as I understand it, is that if they are blowing up infrastructural projects,
yeah,
preventing democracy may not have worked very effectively, but even when there is an attempt to make it work, there are collectors, for example, who have been popular among local populations. They are kidnapped.
No, that is why we must oppose the Maoists.
That is why we must oppose the Maoists.
Yes.
We have to oppose them.
Are you opposing them or are you rationalizing them?
No, I'm opposing them. We have to oppose the Maoists.
And you can oppose them, but we must support some other groups there as well. I am asking for a clever strategy. Absolutely.
A strategy which works.
Absolutely.
Not this nonsense of, you know, every time there's an incident, you say, I am very tough, I'm going to smash them and crush them, and nothing happens.
Okay.
The whole thing against
So
Twitter
basically,
crowd,
you're saying we're
ridiculous.
Condemning the Maoist violence, but where's the strategy that works?
Exactly. Yes. That's
okay.
What
can,
I mean.
Can I just bring in Sumer Singh? His brother was Satyavan Singh. Satyavan Singh was among the 76 officers who was killed in Dantewara. Sumer Singh himself, of course, has been a security officer. Sumer Singh sahab, aapse puchna chahungi. सत्यवान जी जो थे वो मारे गए दांतावाड़ा में, वो तब डिप्टी कमांडेंट थे सीआरपीएफ के साथ. आप भी सिक्योरिटी अफसर रहे हैं.
मैं कमांडेंट रहा हूं.
आप कमांडेंट रहे हैं. और यहाँ पे देश में हमारा डिबेट चलता रहता है कि कौन सा बेस्ट तरीका है. आपका तो, आपने तो भाई खोया, आपने वो डेंजर खुद अपनी आंखों से देखी. यहाँ कहा जा रहा है कि वायलेंस का आंसर वायलेंस नहीं है, फोर्स का आंसर सिर्फ फोर्स नहीं हो सकता. जिसने पर्सनल लॉस एक्सपीरियंस किया है, शायद उनका पर्सपेक्टिव थोड़ा अलग हो जाता है. आपका क्या पर्सपेक्टिव है सुमेर सिंह साहब?
देखिए बरकाजी, मेरा आपसे ये कहना है, सारे ऑडियंस से सारी बातें मैं सुन रहा हूं. पहली बात तो ये है कि मैं राइट फ्रॉम द बिगिनिंग इन माय सर्विस मैं नक्सलाइट मूवमेंट से जुड़ा हुआ हूं. उसके बाद में दूसरी बात यह है कि जितनी बातें निकल के आ रही हैं
जी,
ये 76 आदमी का जो मैसाकर हुआ है, क्या उससे पहले मेरे डीजी मिस्टर श्रीवास्तव बैठे हैं इधर, क्या कोई बता पाएंगे कि उससे पहले कोई भी सिक्योरिटी फोर्स उस जंगल में गई थी? मेरे ख्याल से जहां तक मेरा नॉलेज है और जहां तक मैंने जानकारी प्राप्त की है वहां की पुलिस फोर्सेज से, इंटेलिजेंस से, एक भी सिक्योरिटी फोर्स का आदमी उस जंगल में नहीं गया. एंड देयर वॉज ए कंप्लीट लैक ऑफ इंटेलिजेंस, कंप्लीट लैक इन प्लानिंग, कंप्लीट लैक इन इंफ्रास्ट्रक्चर, कंप्लीट लैक इन स्पोर्ट एंड एवरीथिंग. सो विद दैट इंसिडेंट अकर्ड.
सर आपसे पूछूंगी एक मेरा सवाल कि सरकार की भी कई बार पॉलिसी क्लियर नहीं लगती, हमारी आम जनता की भी पॉलिसी, हम लोग बहुत अलग व्यूज रखते हैं इस पर. आप मानते हैं कि क्योंकि आप यू आर पार्ट ऑफ द टीम दैट अरेस्टेड चारू शर्मा, आप ये चारू मजूमदार, यू आप ये मानते हैं कि एक जेन्युइन पॉलिटिकल प्रॉब्लम है जो पॉलिटिकली ही एड्रेस किया जा सकता है, ये फोर्स से नहीं सॉल्व होगा।
बिल्कुल फोर्स से सॉल्व नहीं हो सकती। मेरे व्यू से फोर्स का इसमें रेशियो जो 10% है, 90% इसका पॉलिटिकल सॉल्यूशन है। और सभी को मालूम था कि छत्तीसगढ़ में नक्सलाइट्स के कैंप्स हैं, वहां वो ट्रेनिंग ले रहे हैं, वहां वो रह रहे हैं,
तो फोर्स से क्यों नहीं सॉल्व हो सकता? क्योंकि सवाल उठेगा प्रवीण जी का, हाथ अभी
फोर्स से इसलिए सॉल्व नहीं हो सकता कि फोर्स से आप उनको मार सकते हैं। मारने से कोई भी किसी भी चीज से आप वोलेंस से वोलेंस को खत्म नहीं कर सकते। आपको उसका कोई सोल्यूशन लेना होगा, उनको उनके उनके उनकी बातों को सुनना होगा, उनकी बातों को समझना होगा, उनको पार्टिसिपेट करना होगा, गवर्नमेंट को उनसे बात करने के लिए पहल करनी होगी।
और आपके भाई मारे गए लेकिन आप फिर भी कहते हैं माओवादी से बातचीत होनी चाहिए?
नहीं, बातचीत निश्चित रूप से होनी चाहिए, क्योंकि मेरे भाई मारे गए, डेफिनेटली वी हैव सफर्ड ए ग्रेट लॉस, हमारी फैमिली को बहुत बड़ा नुकसान हुआ है। लेकिन हम इनको टेररिस्ट बता करके, मैं समझता हूं उन्होंने टेररिस्ट एक्ट जो इन्होंने अभी किया है
जी,
ये बिल्कुल गलत है, ऐसा नहीं होना चाहिए। लेकिन हम इस तरह की यदि 76 आदमी को जब मारा था उस वक्त इसके बारे में कोई एक्शन लिया जाता तो शायद ये घटना नहीं होती।
Praveen, come in there. This is not even a typical liberal bleeding heart perspective. This is a perspective from a man who has lost his younger brother, and he's saying force is not the is not an answer by itself.
Barkha, yes. I'm sorry. I think emotions are definitely relevant.
Yeah.
But we have to look at this a little dispassionately. If you look at the Maoist ideology, they say we have three magic weapons.
Yeah.
The party, the army, and the tactical united front. Now you can fight the party means their political organization.
Yeah.
The army means their PLGA, the base force, the main force, and the secondary force, everything put together. And then there's the tactical united front, which is their assimilation with the various disaffected or disenchanted sections of society. You can fight a political organization politically.
But
how do you fight an army politically? I mean, you have seen what happened the other day.
That's a very good point. Professor Hargopal, if you want to come in there. The point is, by all means, you have to eventually fight this politically. If people are disenfranchised...
No, I beg to disagree.
You don't agree?
I mean, there have been... If you see the termination of most insurgencies, the termination of most insurgencies, you will find that none of the demands of the insurgents was actually met. They were crushed. At the end, you may have a mopping up operation in which you say, well, I'm not going to go out and kill every last one of them, so let them be brought in through some kind of a political accommodation. It is when they have been crushed that they have come to the negotiation.
So are you saying,
ascendant movement.
So are you saying that you believe that force is the first, force has to be the first response?
Absolutely. Security is the first right of the people. That has to be assured. Everything else follows. Everything else follows. You cannot have anything, democracy, development, whatever, governance, unless you have that basic security. And that basic security is a function of arms. This is true of the most primitive state. It is true of the most sophisticated.
Okay, Ajoy, then quickly, Professor Hargopal. Yes.
In India,
yes.
We've had long experience with insurgencies. We completely forget that people who have been in power in Mizoram were at one point considered dangerous terrorists and insurgents.
But Ajoy, here's
what I only talked to, had a dialogue, had a political settlement with. So I'm sorry to say that you have to use both.
At what stage do you use force?
What was done in Mizoram before that peace agreement? It was one of the cruelest, most hideous counterinsurgency campaigns, using methods that you would never be able to justify today. You must understand, you can't just say, oh, the peace agreement is what solved the problem. No. The crushing of the population, the displacement of 85% of the population of that place, dawn to dusk curfews for 10 years.
So you're saying first use force and then use politics. Is that what you're saying?
Don't use that kind of force. But what I am saying, wherever you are citing these peace agreements as a solution, these peace agreements are only the end of the process.
Okay, we take it back. Ajoy, give me a second. Professor Hargopal, I'll come to you in a moment. Now, how do you grow the roots of democracy in these areas? I think that is really the big challenge. And I have somebody here with us, Sudhuram Kunjam. Ne elections mein bhi wahan pe hissa liya, local elections mein. Lekin, zil, aap, kya, aapke kya post hai? Kya post thi?
मैं अभी वर्तमान में जिला पंचायत का सदस्य हूँ।
आप जिला पंचायत के सदस्य?
जी, 1995 से लेकर के मैं जनप्रतिनिधि के रूप में, जनपद सदस्य के रूप में इलेक्टेड में जीतता आ रहा हूँ और काम करता आ रहा हूँ। मेरे साथ वहाँ पर
कौन सी पार्टी के साथ हैं आप?
कम्युनिस्ट
पार्टी। कम्युनिस्ट पार्टी के साथ हैं। आपसे पूछना चाहूंगी, आपने चुनाव में हिस्सा लिया, यहाँ पे बात हो रही है कि जो वायलेंस होती है माओइस्ट की, पहले उसको फोर्स से क्रश करना होगा, तभी वहां पे डेमोक्रेसी बढ़ सकती है ना। आपको जेल में बंद किया गया 2 साल, क्यों बंद किया आपको जेल में?
ये एक वहां पे हमको राजनीतिक षड्यंत्र के तहत ही फंसाया गया था।
आपको बोला गया था कि आप एक कांग्रेस लीडर के किलिंग में आपका भी हाथ है,
नहीं।
घर के अटैक, उनके घर पे अटैक हुआ था, आपको किस चार्ज पे लॉक इन किया था?
मेरे को वो ये कांग्रेस नेता
जी
के घर में जो हमला हुआ
जी,
उस चार्ज पे हमको अरेस्ट किया गया था, लेकिन हम उसको नहीं मानते एक्चुअली, क्योंकि पुलिस प्रशासन अगर उसके रिपोर्टिंग से अगर हमको अंदर करती तो एक ही केस लगता। हमारे पीछे कई केस लगाए थे, 4-5, 8-10 ऐसे केसेस लगाए थे।
अच्छा, ये जो
कभी
आपको एक्विट किया, कोर्ट ने आपको केस हटा दिया?
हाँ भाई, जब बरी हो गया।
आप अभी भी चुनाव में हिस्सा लेंगे?
जी।
डर नहीं लगता, जिंदगी लाइफ खतरे में है?
ना।
आपने देखा नहीं कि अभी कांग्रेस लीडरशिप के साथ क्या हुआ?
हाँ, वो उस घटना के पीछे एक, वो तो महेंद्र कर्मा जी जो सलवाजुड़ूम का संस्थापक रहे हैं, और उन्होंने कांग्रेस शासन काल में वो नक्सलियों को खत्म करने के नाम से सलवाजुड़ूम चालू किए, पर नक्सलियों का तो खत्म नहीं हुआ, पर हम जनता का विनाश हुआ है उसमें।
सलवाजुड़ूम की वजह?
जी जी जी। और
मैं प्रोफेसर अग्रवाल, आई कैन आस्क यू क्वेश्चन बिफोर आई टेक अ ब्रेक। दिस इज वेरी इंटरेस्टिंग। दिस इज समबडी हु स्पेंट 2 years इन जेल। ही सेज आई एम गोइंग टू कंटिन्यू टू एंगेज इलेक्टोरली। नाउ महेंद्र कर्मा'स assassination has been explained in terms of him being the founder of the Salvajudam. But the PCC president, I come back to that which you didn't answer. The PCC president was actually a man who took many positions on privatization, private players being allowed in, on industrialization, the same as many left-leaning groups, the same as Amar. Why should someone like him be targeted?
No, the question is, no, I just want to, I mean, address it, a couple of questions.
Yeah.
One is, no, a friend talked about the fear in the bus.
But the support is there out of fear.
I can tell him that when we went to negotiate, when the collector was abducted, not even a single person in Bastar was willing to talk to us. There was such a fear of the police and the state that nobody came.
But there's
to
no
us.
Fear of the Maoists. No, but there's no fear
there
of the Maoists.
There is not even a single democratic voice.
I accept
voice,
that there's fear of right? the state. And is there fear of the Maoists?
After Binayak Sen's, you know, the way that the Chhattisgarh state dealt, no middle class person, be it journalist, university professor, lawyer, doctor, nobody. You come to Andhra, there are 100 people who can talk. No. They will condemn the Maoists and they can also condemn the security forces. What have you done with the democratic culture of Chhattisgarh?
Are you blaming the state for it, or would you equally blame both the Maoists and the
sir,
state?
I can tell you that such a fear has been during Chandra Babu's period. They tried this fear in Andhra Pradesh.
Okay, I have to take a break, sir. I'll come back to you after a break. We're taking a break. When we come back, last comments from our panel, questions from the audience. And this question persists, that if we are all condemning this violence by the Maoists, what is that cogent anti-Naxal strategy? That is where actually the contradictions emerge. That is where Ajay Sahani has made an important point, that you have to ultimately use the weapon of politics, but do you need other weapons before that? That's where actually public opinion diverges. Coming back in a short break. The people, is India civil society guilty of still romancing the Naxals despite the brutal attack that we've seen in Chhattisgarh this past week? Before we go back to our panel, let's take some questions from the audience.
Sure. There are two strands of thought. One is the use of security force, intelligence, surveillance. The other is the how we can really mainstream the marginalized Adivasis.
Yes.
So where we are really converging, we have foist the Reserve Act, the Rights Act of 2006. Yes. No politician is talking about all these things. Where are the milestones? Why political class is aloof to this? Is it because these people are not forming the electoral vote bank?
Okay, a cynical thought there, and we'll take it back to the panel. You have a question here?
Yeah, my question would be on the same lines. Would it be prudent for the government to bring up policies to bring the Maoists, to bring the Naxals into the mainstream, and to basically see their opinion and just bring them to the political mainstream and then deal with it?
Let me take that to Ajay Sahani. You said, of course, you have to apply the balm of politics, but it can't be stage one. Is what I'm
absolutely.
So what should be stage one? What should be stage one?
Look, first you have to ask yourself why and where have the Maoists consolidated themselves?
Yeah.
They have consolidated themselves where there is an administrative political vacuum. And it is purely incidental. It's a historical accident that it is Maoist here. There are other parts of the country where it becomes an ethnic tribal movement. Mm. There are other parts of the country where it became an Islamist movement. The basic thing is there is an absence of administration, governance, and provision of basic
public
services.
But would you send in the army, for example?
Yes, not the army at all. Oh. Not. I think.
No, I asked this because there have been those demands too, and defense minister
this
ruled
is
it out.
Purely a policing
the
issue.
Army itself ruled it out, Praveen.
Yes,
there have been demands in the past.
This is a policing issue followed by an administrative issue.
Absolutely.
Policing issues. The basic thing is you cannot develop what you do not control.
So control
comes first.
Okay. Do you accept that? That first you have to be in control, only then can you talk about
it. There's a fundamental flaw in what he's saying. He's saying people, movement, move into areas where there is lack of administrative control, where the state has not, where the interface with the state is not compassionate at all. So, I'm only saying that there is a response which is security, which is police, which is by force, but, you cannot. You will not be able to make it work if you distance people who are actually working in those areas in other ways.
His point is those areas are literally liberated zones where nobody's in.
They're not liberated zones. Please don't use that expression.
In quotes, not my phrase. But that's
no,
by the government of India.
By the government, even worse.
By the government of India, which
but
is very much.
But in a sense, an admission that they don't have control there, right? That's what you're saying.
Therefore, they can't enter there. They choose not to enter.
So, if you don't have control, how do you talk to people? If you can't conduct an election rally, if you can't say come out and vote, how do you
deliver administration?
First of all, the Naxal movement today, I don't know, Mr. Hargopal will be able to say, so is in the absence of a left vacuum in this country anyway, because the 60s, 70s was when the left was, ruling the world in a say. So where, what is the ideological conviction of those that support the Naxalites? I have no idea, but it is a reaction against a perceived sense of injustice done to them.
Can I take one more question and then we'll come back?
Sir, my question is to you. You suggested that force is very important in order to solve these things, and peace treaties come on the second level. But solution is seek from both the side. But who should make the first step? The government, the state government, the center government, or these Naxals?
Ajay and then Praveen, please. Yes.
It is essentially, and at the outset, a state police problem from the beginning. Then it is a state administration problem. These are the first two stages. The center has been asserting more and more its role in these things, and it has taken itself, sort of painted itself into a corner. It doesn't have the capacity and it doesn't have the constitutional power to intervene at the state level. And it has given an alibi to the states not to do anything. They say, but the center will do. So it has to be done by the states. They have to develop the capacities to deliver, and the first thing they have to deliver is security to the population.
Okay.
As far as what you're saying, I agree with you. The basis is grievance. There's no problem with that. Two, I also agree with you that they should stop wasting time on all these sympathizers and all. When the movement is degraded, the sympathizers will disappear. So the eventual target must narrowly be.
But where have they disappeared? The sympathizers.
No, but the movement is not degraded.
Will.
The movement is not degraded.
Well, degrade the movement. Target the movement.
Do you accept the argument that there has to be force first and then politics? Or do you hear what Sudhish Mishra is saying, that as long as there is grievance, they force and politics will have to go hand in hand?
See, like,
you cannot separate.
I mean, first of all, let me say that I don't know, because I made a film called Hazaro Khwaishe, see, I shouldn't be identified with some Naxal movement. In fact, in personal terms, I have a personal sense of loss amongst those people who were killed. And one of the Congress leaders that was killed is actually related to me. So, I mean, I don't say it but since I have known Madhya Pradesh and I have known Chhattisgarh and I have known the history of it, which we won't go into now, how I have known, the absence of any kind of compassion, the absence of the interface between the people and the government being nothing else but forest contractors and police, where there is their bereft of any hope, is the basis of the problem.
I agree fully with him. But there is a problem here. We are saying we will provide this adequate and compassionate governance in Dantewada and in Abutma and in Bastar. We can't even do that in other parts of the country which are fully in our control. I oppose this developmental argument on the grounds that it is a fraud on the people. You cannot deliver these services in the heartland areas where you cannot even deliver these services.
One more question, then we go back to the
party. I actually have a question on the point made by Mr. Sahani. Somehow it feels that government is not able to understand the magnitude of problem. We are talking about the Red Corridor, which has influence on almost over 200 districts.
173 officials.
Almost. I mean, it's continuously increasing. So now we are talking about pushing these people, using force, and then bringing them to the peace process, to the table. I mean, bringing them down on the knees and then saying that you come to the table and we'll have a result.
Not bringing them down. He's just saying that first there has to be some control of the state in those areas.
But then what will be the result of this sort of a control? You keep pushing. It's not just one.
No, which are the people we are bringing down? We're not bringing down people. We're bringing down a criminal movement.
Ajay, let's just Praveen come in. Praveen, go ahead. Criminal movement.
You have been
सारे देश को इस बात की जानकारी है, पूरी सरकार को इस बात की जानकारी है कि छत्तीसगढ़ में नक्सल्स हैं और उनके खिलाफ अभी तक कोई कार्रवाई क्यों नहीं की गई, चाहे पॉलिटिकल हो, चाहे पुलिस की हो, आर्मी की हो, कोई भी हो, क्यों नहीं की गई?
व्हाट
आर द रीजन बिहाइंड इट?
आई गो अलोंग विद व्हाट अजय हैज सेड. वी हैव टू फर्स्ट ब्रिंग अबाउट domination of the area. Unless the area is secure, you can't have anything. You can't deliver anything at all. This is a fact.
No, sir, why it is not dominated? What was the reason behind it?
Now, let's talk concrete term. 40,000 square kilometers.
Yes.
And how much of force do you have?
We have enough force in the country. We have.
So put area CRP, in there.
CSF, every force is there.
It's.
The divergence, Vikram Srivastav, is on this. The divergence is on what stage do you bring in force, what stage do you bring in politics. Quickly, and then come to your joy, Vikram. Yeah.
See, I'd like to make one thing very clear. Just now you said that they are scared of interacting with the state, they are scared of this. Let me tell you. In 2010, when all this happened, when large number of people were killed, more than 2,000 boys and girls applied voluntarily, joined the CRP. They completed their training in 2011 and they are deployed in that area. Why did they come forward if they didn't?
Okay, so we continue to analyze this problem in different. Can I take one more question here? Yeah.
My question is to Mr. Sahani. Is like. The Maoists have been there in our country for the last 40 years. I mean, is it possible that they survive this way and come out in this way without any political support?
No political support.
Forget about popular support. They even have support of political parties. Every time there's an election, one party or the other gets married to them.
I'm never saying
that there is no political support.
Okay, one more question here.
Well, I feel the security and the police brass of India has failed the countrymen of India because they don't have the competence to.
How do you say that sitting in the studio, never having done a police officer's job?
Because it is about intelligence gathering, it is about cutting the supply lines of those particular Maoists, because
they might say that the country has let them down. You're saying they've let down the country.
Let them down because 12,000 forces and they Maoists are maybe numbering 1,000 maybe or 200. You don't have that network. You don't have that intelligence.
How did you come up with this figure that the number of, can 1,000 people influence 173 districts of India?
No, but that particular area you will see that the percentage of Maoists would be surely less.
Okay, Praveen, we have to start taking final comments. Praveen and then Ajoy and then Professor Haigopal. Yes.
No, I don't think he's being very kind to the entire
to the forces,
situation.
Yeah.
The problem is immense. Let me tell you, the number of their army, they have military platoons, military companies, and so on and so forth. Their army numbers in anywhere.
What's the one thing you change in the policy? What's the one thing you change?
Well, you have to train and equip the state police. That's the first thing. You can't just parachute central forces into an area and try and say the problem is going to be solved by them.
Okay, I'm going to take a last question here.
I think the question is to both Mr. Bose and Mr. Sahni. They're brought up earlier. I think what's key for civil society in particular is to understand the problem of the Maoists and the Naxals. So isn't there a fundamental difference in this current insurgency compared to the insurgencies in the past? Because there were comments made regarding similar steps being taken by the government.
Okay, Ajoy, do you want to come in there? These are not comparable situations.
No,
very quickly.
No, absolutely. Because, you know, Barkha, the point is that we keep on getting diverted by trying to characterize Maoists as this or that. My point in all this is how do you fight them most effectively?
What's the one thing you change in the policy?
What I would firstly do is that people of this country, and when I say people, I mean powerful people of this country, the elite of this country, will have to spend a little more time on the Adivasi problem and the Maoist problem than the IPL or BCCI or spot fixing.
I couldn't agree with you. I think the media has to take part of the blame on this.
I very much include myself as a journalist in that. What I mean to say is that we need to prioritize this problem.
We need some ownership on this.
But also
quickly,
we need to not have this absurd suggestion that we can have a military solution to this. We cannot.
Okay. One question here.
Sir, but we are sort of, you've rejected the developmental argument, but we do have 230 crores spent, 80 odd policies were put into place and boasted about. But I mean, the effects aren't being seen anywhere outside the capital, so how can you really say that development doesn't play a role when the people in the state aren't getting what they've been told?
But you are reinforcing my argument. Give me a second. One question.
Sir, my basic question still remains the same. If somebody is coming and destroying your house, would you keep quiet? And their habitat is being destroyed after independence. Why they have woken up after independence? Before independence, the struggle was not there.
Professor Haigopal, what's the one thing you change in the policy? What's the one thing you change? I'll come to you, Ajay. What's the one thing you have mediated actual releases of you have intervened more than once. When Chidambaram was Home Minister, he said, I've invited them, but they have to lay down their arms. And that, Praveen is saying, will never happen, right?
No, he didn't say lay down arms. He says, don't use arms.
A temporary cessation, a temporary ceasefire, abjure violence.
My problem is that the very nature of the model of development that we have adopted, where you have to recklessly mine in order to increase your rate of growth, and this is a primitive accumulation. You are using raw material, selling the raw material to multiple tribals are saying that why are you selling this raw material? You have to answer
but
the
Nand
question.
But Nandkumar Patel, who was killed, also had this point of view. He was still killed, sir.
No, but see, of course, when there is a growing in a group, nobody supports that they're killing. Any loss of human life, one has to feel sorry. That's how we worked for peace in Andhra Pradesh. But my point is, if the Manmohan Singh, Chidambaram, Ahluwalia, this whole group, is not willing to look at the problem and lost in the romanticism of the growth, rate of growth and 9%,
I am sure tribals of this country have to pay the price. They don't mind.
Okay, so this is interesting. The balance of liberalization
and then have your model of development. This model
okay, this
of
has to be my last question. Last question.
Well, my question is, why didn't the government actually think of any repercussions for Salwa Judum in the first place? Now it's been so much things are happening because of it.
Vikram Srivastava, come in on the Salwa Judum as we end. As we end, the Supreme Court has made its position clear. That's the highest court of the land. Everybody else, even those who advocate a very strong response, where security forces do not defend the Salwa Judum. Is the Salwa Judum a disastrous experiment gone wrong that has boomeranged bad? You're saying no?
No.
You would defend the Salwa Judum?
Yes.
Why? One line.
Because.
Why?
Because the Maoists said this is the biggest threat to us since 1972.
But it's extra constitutional in its approach.
That is the Supreme Court's view.
And not yours. Clearly.
I just like to raise a very basic point. She said something about what is the way forward.
Yeah.
Now, right from the time of Mr. Chidambaram, he's been saying, come to the table. Tell us what all things in specifics you wish to discuss.
So, is there nobody willing to engage politically?
Yes. Nobody comes. The second point is...
No, but sir, Azad, when he came, he was killed.
Take a second.
Azad was working for the negotiation. Right. He wrote a letter to Swami Agnivel.
Einstein once said, if the facts don't fit the theory, change the facts.
Are awaiting trial. Now, all these people in different areas in these 9 states, they are awaiting trial. There are no special courts. 22 people, although 75 who were massacred, 22 people by name were released by the court. All the 22 were released. There is little material evidence. Now, you had raised the point about demoralization.
Yeah.
Now,
that's where it could happen.
What is the way forward? Okay. What is the way forward? That is what we need.
Okay, I'm unfortunately at the end of the program. Quick last comments from both of you. Romanticization of the growth rate is what Professor Hargopal has said to me for saying, is there romance around the Naxals?
Absolutely. I mean, and that's a good counter, actually. people romance this wonderful development and beautiful paradise which is coming.
Okay.
And some people romance the Naxals.
I just had one line.
I agree, this is a very brutal state.
Yeah.
And something needs to be done about that. Two, very crucially, what the gentleman here said, the forces have let down the country. No. I think it is the policy makers who have let down the forces and thrown them into situations where their lives are wasted without any enduring gains in the country.
I think that's an important note to end on. And I also think that important takeaway is ownership. The ownership, too often in India we see the middle class and the upper middle class passing judgments on what should happen in conflict zones without ever having invested emotionally or politically in the people. So I think that remains a really big part of the elitism that has entered our discourse. But at the same time, important point being made there, no cogent policy. And it isn't the forces who are letting down people. Forces are dying because there is no cogent policy. That's where the letdown is. Thank you very much for watching. Thank you.